Brought to you by The Register, biting the hand that feeds IT.
Welcome to the InfoSmack Podcast
with your hosts, Greg Nierman and the notorious Mark Farley.
Hey now!
With the diva of disruptive technologies, Christina Wild.
Hear the latest on enterprise tech from the industry pundits and insiders.
Storage.
Yes!
Virtualization.
Yes!
Servers.
Yes!
And networking.
Yes!
Make sure you visit theregister.co.uk for show notes and more. The InfoSmack podcast begins transmission now.
Well, hey, this is great. And another great InfoSmack podcast in a foreign country. This time we're in London, England. Actually, outside of London, England, at Sefton Park. Is that correct, Chris?
That's the name of this area. But we're actually in a place called Stoke Poges, which is just outside Slough.
Okay.
Unlike, I think you looked it up and thought it was in Liverpool.
I typed in the name in Google and it went to Liverpool. And yeah, I didn't think that was quite right. But
Chris kind of winced when you said foreign country.
it's foreign order for you.
Foreign to InfoSmack.
Yeah, I'm okay because I've got no jet lag, so I'm fine.
You're in better shape than most of us here. Well, let's go around the room and do some quick introductions. Sitting to my left is my good buddy Nigel Poulton. Nigel, thanks for joining us, man.
Absolutely. Pleasure, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Also with us is Chris Evans. Chris.
Thank you, Greg.
Obviously, we're in your backyard. Nigel, how far are you from here?
Good question, actually. Probably about 2.5 hours.
And your wife is pregnant.
She's due in 2 weeks.
Whoa.
It's 2.5 hours if I put my foot to the floor. It's about 4 hours in rush hour, so hopefully she doesn't call me during rush hour.
It'll be about 2 hours if she calls you.
You start better running now.
How many kids you have?
Well, we have two at the moment. This is number three, and hopefully the final. We'll see.
That's great.
Well, medical science can handle that one for you.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, if the storage industry starts paying more, then maybe we could have some
more. Nice. Also joining us is Devang Panchagar. Devang, hey, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Greg.
Devang, you have the blog Storage Nerve, and you're also with your company?
CDS, Computer Data Source, as their CTO.
Very nice. And our two featured guests this week, first up, Hugh Yoshida. Hugh, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
No introduction. And another guy that needs no introduction, Klaus Mikkelsen. Thanks, Klaus.
So, doing?
So the reason why you're both here, why we're all here, is it's an HDS Blogger Day, HDS Day.
HDS Day, HDS Blogger Day.
And really, you guys are giving us kind of an update of where HDS is at. Hugh, you were on the podcast last year. We kind of got introduced to you and did kind of a quick dive into HDS and in your vision for the organization and some of the products that are coming out. And Klaus, you've also been on the podcast before. I think I coined you the father of storage. I don't know if that came from me, but I just called you the father of storage.
Enough with the age jokes. Come on.
You say grandfathers?
No, I said grandfather. I said father of storage. So obviously, thank you for having us out this week. But before we get into it, Hugh, I heard a story that when you're not pushing storage, you're pushing weights.
Oh, yes. Yeah, something I've been doing all my life, yes.
I hear you're quite the bench presser. Well, I don't know what you call it.
Well, yeah, it's one I can keep in practice, yes.
Well, do you find time? You travel all over the world all the time.
Yeah.
Do you find time to cut out time to go work out?
I've tried to do that, wherever I go.
Yeah. That's great. Well, let's jump into it. We had a pretty lively session this morning around storage virtualization and VAI. And Hugh, I know storage virtualization has kind of been your baby. It's one of those things that you've really championed. And if you listen carefully this morning, kind of what you pull out of VAI is an extension of the value of what storage virtualization can bring an organization. And just to make sure we're all on the same page, because a lot of people confuse storage for virtualized servers with storage virtualization. Storage virtualization is very different. Storage virtualization gives you the capability of using multiple vendor storage arrays that are all being managed. I don't know if you call it a gateway, if that's the appropriate term, or what the VSP functions as, but that's essentially that VSP is managing the different arrays underneath it.
The VSP is a control unit itself. so it responds. It's that legitimate target for the server. So if you're going to be, we don't have to proxy, we don't have to crack packets to see what's with the traffic that's coming in. We know the track tables and cache slots, so we can map it directly. It's a lot like VMware. You know, VMware, when we tried to consolidate applications, it was difficult to do because the applications that hooks into the operating systems,
right,
had to unhook them. But when VMware came along and says, okay, don't unhook them, just stack up your operating systems and your applications. So in our case, we don't remap the LUNs. We just take whatever LUNs are there, present our cache, and put it back.
I thought it was pretty interesting. I think it was Hef that made the comment today that VMware is to server virtualization what Hitachi is to storage virtualization. I mean, that's quite a claim. That's really putting Hitachi on the mantle of storage virtualization.
Right, yes.
Was that his term or yours?
No, it's a term we've been using in Hitachi. You know, the whole idea is it's a simple way to virtualize storage, just like VMware is a simple way to virtualize operating systems.
Yep. Well, Nigel, Chris DeVay, you guys were all part of the sessions this morning. Nigel, what jumped out at you as far as the discussions? I know, you know, there's some points, there are some challenging discussions there. You guys didn't let the HCS team off the hook at all.
Yeah, I think there were quite a few bold statements made this morning. And one of them was around the speed to market for VAAI. Sorry, I can't see VAAI. So.
VAAI.
VAAI to me. And I think Hef it was that made this statement that because of Hitachi's roots in mainframe and the fact that VMware and a lot of what it does sprang from, you know, ZVM, some of the concepts that are in there, he attributed Hitachi's roots to mainframe as to why they can get to market so quickly, because I believe that Hitachi were the first to announce full VAAI support in the VSP. And it was something that to me seemed like that's a bit of a stretch when he said that. And so I called him out on it, and we had quite a lively and interesting discussion. And it turned out that especially when it comes to atomic test and set and the you know, that side of VAAI, I believe him after that. I mean, Chris, you went away and talked to, was it Klaus?
I was talking to Klaus because I did mainframe years ago, and I remember the reserve statement or the reserve macro you could write in assembler. And I thought it was volume-based, and obviously it is, but there's also the ability to break that down to a track layer or to a lower level.
Yeah.
We talked about that in the way that it's done within a CCW, which is a way of issuing instructions to a disk, basically. And clearly, you can break it down to a smaller, more granular level, and it's that sort of knowledge that I think is being leveraged.
Yeah, it's probably something I'd like to write about in the future, because it was almost an epiphany moment for me. I understand why, you know, the HDS microcode is able to implement some of this stuff so quickly because of its roots with mainframe. You know, the fact that it can take CKD on the front end but then map in onto FBA on the back end, and how a lot of that can be leveraged for some of the funky stuff VMware does today. I didn't get it at all before this morning when Michael Hefferman mentioned it. I thought, he's having me on here. Genuinely thought that. We opened up the discussion. I had that epiphany moment. Chris went away, said, yeah, I still think they're wrong. Talked with Klaus, came back and said, yeah, you know what, Nigel? They're actually right. And I got a lot from that. So
I was sitting next to you, so I felt your epiphany.
Yeah. But I think that was the
just
big
sort of
thing for me.
Yeah.
And as well, you know, just VAAI and VMware in general, I see now that HDS are really plugged into that.
Well,
they're all over it.
I'm kind of curious, and I don't know, DeVay, if you've got an opinion about this or not, but I just wonder what VAI is going to mean for organizations and IT departments that are virtualizing on top of file and not block. It almost, for VAI, because it is works only with block, it almost forces as an organization or IT to kind of move away from file-based VMs and move to block. Is that reasonable? Is that?
Yeah. That is correct at this point, because it's all supported on a block-based storage and it doesn't on NFS, unless I think there is more innovation which I think is expected over the next few months, years to come, which is we will see some innovation going on with NFS and PNFS related to VAI. The question is, how will it help customers overall with expanding into virtualization along with the file-based storage.
And I wonder how much it matters. I mean, it's just storage. It's just block. Should IT managers care what that format is that they're storing, their virtualization that is sitting on top of?
In the end, they shouldn't, no.
But there was a comment made about that, which I think was quite relevant. I think as Hef said, that NFS was used because block couldn't be made to be as efficient because you had to shrink LUN sizes because you were getting locking and other issues. So people moved towards NFS for those sort of reasons. Mm-hmm. New API calls and the way they're implemented sort of push that balance back a bit.
Right.
It makes block more effective and more efficient. And clearly that's what that's all about. It's all about making that box work as effectively as you want it to. If NFS comes up with something else that allows it to push it the other way, maybe people will move towards NFS a bit more.
I find all this very interesting because here we 3 months, 4 months ago, we were all talking about unified storage, all these vendors coming out with new arrays and technologies that was more focused on NFS, SIFS, and block storage all in a single array. And now we go back to the same argument is having a unified array but not having VAI support for certain things within that array, how helpful is it?
Yeah, I wonder too. I just wonder after hearing the discussion today if there's some point in the near future we get past that and we're not, we look at storage not by the protocol but by what applications are going to be running on it and what's best for the efficiency of the environment.
And I hope we get there. I mean, it's just it's fun and interesting to talk about converged platforms and all that. But right now, at least today, I think customers still view it as two separate platforms. You got file, you have block. You have reasons for file, you have reasons for block. In the future, yeah, they probably will converge, and nobody will really care. A lot of the big trends that are going on right now, and I think VAAI, I like VII better.
Yeah.
Just say VI, we all know what it means. Is that more intelligence is being put into the array. And if you look at things like some of the things that we do with dynamic provisioning and dynamic tiering are things that have been done in the past, but manually. And so as the array picks up more and more of the workload, yeah, I think you'll see a blending.
To me, Greg, as well, I think a lot of organizations have virtualized 10, 20% of their estate. And typically that 10 or 20% has been the lower end services, the lower end applications, the easy ones to do.
Right.
And as you start to look to virtualize the more critical and more performance related applications, you then need the performance and the latency that comes with a block storage array. Now, prior to VAAI, there were challenges around that, especially when it comes to locking. So I think VAAI is almost an enabler to say, right, we can go from what we've done now, those lower tier applications that we could do on NFS. Now we've got something that's more viable, no pun intended, for those more high performance applications. Because But the thing is, yeah, I think that's important because prior to VAAI, there's no chance you're going to be, virtualizing those high performance applications. You can't do it on NFS because of the latency.
Right.
To get around that latency, you've got to do it on block.
So you think this could actually help an adaptation for server virtualization because now you've got storage that can support high performance?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that VMware probably looked at it and said, we've done really well at that low-end stuff, but to truly be able to virtualize the higher-end stuff, we need to make block better.
Yeah.
And VAAI does that. It's probably step one of many steps, but it's important.
Yeah, some of the reasons for using files was that taking snapshots for backup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was a problem too. Now they've created an API for backup vendors to be able to do that.
Yep.
So now there's no need to have that file system or that snap copy.
I wonder, I don't hear many end users using the term VAAI. And while we talk about the driving factor for this is performance for higher end applications, Hugh, when you're talking to end users out there, are they able to, after you introduce them to the concept of VAI, understand it and see how it fits into their environment and how it can improve their environment?
Yes, they do. I mean, everybody wants to do vMotion, right? And especially if you've got cases where you're spinning up these things and you got these locks. That SCSI reserve is, they've hit these problems. they understand it. So once you explain what they can do, they're just excited
they
about
have
it.
That light bulb moment, yeah, and they say, right. Well, you know, then they find the applications they can put on top of it.
And then to Nigel's point, I mean, most of them have been doing this on modular arrays, dual controller arrays, you know, because that's the type of storage you had for those tier two, tier three applications. And now they're trying to transition to enterprise. They want to move to enterprise types of storage systems to get the, and they don't want to have to tear out what they have, the modular stuff, to get the new stuff that has the VAI support. So that's why this virtualization concept that we have in conjunction with the VAI is so attractive to them.
So I have a question for both you and Klaus. We all know that adaptation of storage virtualization has really gone very far, and with all the evangelism that has happened, yeah, from the HDS perspective. When HDS came up with this concept, and I would think it's probably 2003 when there were probably some R&D and other things going on, or I think 2005 was when the release happened. How did HDS actually think about this concept when virtualization was really new? How did all this come about where this became something that HDS started believing in and Hitachi started believing in, that this is going to be the game changer in the future?
Well, I think there's a lot of, back in the day, 2004 was when released it. We actually started working on it in the late 90s, but there's a lot of risk getting into that, because once you do virtualization the way we do virtualization, and we know that customers can go out and buy other vendor storage behind it, are we sort of dissecting our own market or eating our own market? And so there was a concern, but I think we pushed aggressively. We had a lot of early adopters, and TCO gains, ROI, all of the financials were there, and it began to spread like wildfire. So I think we're on the right track. There's been a lot of talk about virtualization in different forms, like doing virtualization in the network, and there are literally hundreds of startups that try to do that. But I think we're the first platform that actually delivered storage virtualization and made it enterprise level.
Yeah, actually, you know, it started when we introduced the 7700 in about the mid-90s. The first step was separating the control information from the data itself, separate data cache, separate buses. So this allowed us to dynamically change the configurations by just changing bits in a control store. And that's the basis for where we could then move into virtualization and attach other people's storage behind us. Initially, it was done so that we could combine open systems and mainframe on the same systems and have ports that could be mode set dynamically. Same physical port could be mode set to different operating systems. So that sort of built on that. Then we needed to scalability. I mean, if you're going to virtualize and you're going to open the floodgates like this, you need something that will scale. So then we went to this internal switch architecture that allowed us to switch. Now, as we move forward and we start to see more of this workload being downloaded to the storage, we need more processing power in the storage. So the VSP has a separate processing pool of quad-core processors that will do all these things, like keeping track of the dynamic provisioning, the replication, copies, and all that. And the I/O ports are now just optimized to do I/O. So you see a general evolution of things. First, the ability to dynamically configure, then the scalability of the switching, and now the ability to do more processing in the storage control unit.
Hugh, can I just ask, you mentioned there that separating control data from real data or user data was a key, mm-hmm, in enabling you to do virtualization.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Cause yes.
I think that's quite an interesting statement, because clearly virtualization is a competitive advantage. It doesn't fit everywhere, okay? Mm-hmm. I think we all appreciate that. But it is it's a tick in the box that not, mm-hmm, every vendor has. Now, I've often asked myself, why doesn't every other vendor do that? Now, not every other vendor separates control data, yeah, from user data. I'm now starting to wonder, just with that statement, well, aha, is that why some of the other vendors are not implementing this?
That's right. They do it with appliances sitting in front. But the appliances really are not virtualizing the storage anymore, because now you have to take your LUNs and deconstruct them into managed extents and virtual extents. You have a mapping table.
And the way I answer it is, if other vendors could do virtualization in the storage array, why don't they? And the fact is, the real answer is they can't because of the underlying architecture. And we spent a lot of time in Hitachi of building this box so that it has a global cache and you know, the comments that you made. But if you could, you would. Why wouldn't you?
Even just to keep you quiet, Klaus.
Nothing will keep me quiet.
Well, you know, if EMC could do it, then they could leverage their SRDF, okay, with other people's storage. Definitely, that would be a big advantage to them. But they are doing it.
And that's because of the underlying architecture that prevents them from doing it.
Yeah,
that's interesting. You know, NetApp does virtualization, storage virtualization. HDS does it, and I've not seen it firsthand. But apparently, EMC's VPlex does some level of storage virtualization as well. But I've not heard it that actively promoted, and it's kind of in a unique use case.
It's another appliance. It's like an SVC. They map the cache tables.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they can do virtualization in that way, but it's another appliance. It is not a legitimate target to the application. There's all this mapping that goes. It's another level of mapping on top of the mapping they have to do for the
it's a level of complexity too.
It's a mapping of the cache on top of the mapping of the extents.
So who do you view as your competitors then in this in storage virtualization? Do you have competitors, or do you focus more on the distinctive capabilities that you're bringing to the table?
I think the closest one to us, well, of course, the biggest other virtualization is the SVC from IBM.
Right.
But that is an appliance, okay, and it can't inherit, it can't pass on all the functions as Hef explained, because of this indirection, this remapping. The other one would be NetApp, but then NetApp is doing that through a file system. And that file system is going to have scalability problems and performance problems.
Well, that's interesting. So what's the, since I think you guys announced the VAI a couple months ago?
Well, it was first announced on the AMS product.
Right.
That was when concurrent with the announcement by VMware, we announced support in the AMS.
But for the VSP and for virtual storage, that's been a couple months?
Yeah, February.
That's been a couple months.
And what's the response been that you've gotten from not just end users, but I'd be more curious to know that do the analysts understand the value of this? Because I don't give analysts a whole lot of credit. Some do, some don't.
Yeah,
I don't give analysts a whole lot of
magic quadrangle.
Yeah, I don't give them a whole lot of credit for understanding a lot of the technology we're talking about because very few of them actually use it. But I just want, because I think it is one of those things that needs to be evangelized a bit. I know that's what you've been busy running around the country or around the world doing. Because I don't know, again, I don't think end users identify the term VAAI. I mean, they know they've got a high priority applications that require that kind of transaction with their storage. And they know they got the problem to solve. I'm just a little curious because I think it's going to take that. There's probably a bit of a curve to get end users to understand what VAI is and how it's important to their environment. I mean, it's critical. This is not about HDS. This is problem of HDS. This is about what are you doing with your virtualized environment and how do you best leverage your virtualized environment? Understanding the tools that are available to you. And VAI, I think I would say probably one of the most critical elements for virtualization in the last year and a half.
Well, I think it has to be because effectively we've got to the stage where there's too much work going on in that server that has to be pushed down to somewhere else, because now we want to be able to move virtual machines around, we want to copy them, we want to do lots of advanced functionality, which just sucks up an awful amount of workload at the server level. So you push it down to the array and you let that do the hard work, and that's got to be the way to move things forward and scale it out further.
You asked an interesting question, Nigel, when we were in the room earlier about how many customers are actually virtualizing third-party disk. Are they actually virtualizing that disk, or are they using it more as a migration tool to get off of some of their legacy storage? I think I'll throw that out to you, Hugh. When you look out there, I don't know if you want to throw out percentages or some indication as far as how many people are actually virtualizing that you're exposed to, virtualizing third-party disk, versus how many just leverage that VSP technology to do data migration.
Yeah, it's hard to get counts of that. We know what licenses are shipped. Now it's in the base operating system, so it's hard to tell who are actually using it. I would say that initially people used it as a migration tool, and once they migrated, then we would replace with AMS behind that. But there are a lot of people who are doing it more and more now. After the downturn we had in 2008, 2009, more and more were trying to conserve their current assets. They weren't buying new storage.
Right.
So they were doing more of the virtualization to get the new functions that we have. When we introduced HDP, I think that was a big kicker, because once we had HDP, then they could enhance their current, thin provision the current storage.
Can I ask a question just on what you were mentioning earlier, Greg, about VAAI? Do customers and do the analysts get how important it is? What about Hitachi and HDS as an engineering organization? How is VAAI prioritized internally? So if we could, you know, compare it against something like dynamic provisioning or dynamic tiering, is it more important than those? Is this, I guess what I'm trying to ask is it a key feature now, or is it still like third, fourth, fifth, sixth on the priority list?
It's hard to prioritize. I mean, you mentioned HDP and HDT, very important functions, and VAAI. I don't think one is more important than the other. I mean, it all goes together.
The power trade itself.
Yeah, and it's important to different people. And but it all goes together to build the overall package that we're trying to sell. I mean, one comment I'll make about VAI.
this term,
I'm on a new soapbox here. I'm going to redefine VAI.
He's the father of VAI.
Yeah, we need to get VMware to come out with better acronyms.
Who came up with that? But people look at a lot of this function as a binary thing. You either have it or you don't. And we focus on checkboxes. But so you can have VAI, but you don't necessarily have all the primitives and all the support. And I think that's the beauty of Hef's session today, was he did the deep dive and your light bulb went off and I saw others in the room go off. It's understanding what it really is, and it's not a binary function. And that's true within provisioning also.
Okay, I'd just like to say one thing. I don't think Hitachi are really in a position to criticize other people's acronyms.
Point taken. When those words came out of my mouth, I went, oh, what am I setting myself for?
You should develop an official acronym committee.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I think because of the high attention to VMware, I mean, the success of VMware, that's a natural for us to be able to ride on that success with VAAI. So it is a priority in our marketing messages.
I think we saw that today, didn't we? Let's face it.
Yeah.
The conversation and the depth we've gone to, it's obvious that is being very much addressed.
Well, I look at the level of conversation that took place today, and we're like in the industry. I mean, we eat, drink, sleep this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I wonder, there's probably going to be a little bit of a ramp from an end user perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, if the light bulb is just going off for the guys that are active in the industry, what about the people that are somewhat inactive and out in the end user, the guy in the trenches, that may not be exposed to a lot of these different technologies?
Every customer I talk to, everybody has VMware. And every time I mention the primitives, especially the SCSI reserve, they just get excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not hard to understand, because if you've got VMware, you've suffered through those problems.
Right.
See, and I think I personally think all these things are just an evolution. I think where we are, we didn't have VAAI 8 months ago, 10 months ago. Now we do, and this is a topic in the industry. Mm-hmm. I think 2 years down the road, we are going to be looking at something big and new. VAAI will be natively in every array that's going to be built in the future.
I don't disagree with that, but I think there are some unique things going on here, especially around storage virtualization, that I don't think 2 years from now EMC is going to support VAAI for third-party storage.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
And so I think there's going to be, you're right, there's always going to be something that gets kind of hotter and more interesting or brings more features, but I think there's some distinctive capabilities here that separate itself.
Yeah. And I think, Chris's point, I mean, this is not just going to be VMware. Other applications are going to need to offload things to make themselves more efficient.
Oh, that's an interesting way of looking at it.
I mean, just the right same initially with VXFS was an offload.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
Had nothing to do with VMware.
Yeah.
So where does this evolve then here? Where's the next extension off of VAAI then? Or maybe virtualization?
Well, there'll be other things. I mean, things like Symantec doing the write same to be able to tell us when they delete files.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft, they do more of the client provider model, but VSS and VDI, things that we can then use to make our copies more efficient or make their copies more efficient or synchronized, more consistent. Mm-hmm. There's and databases. Databases could take advantage of this if they wanted to.
Right.
Would it be true to say then that storage vendors, I appreciate you can only speak for Hitachi, but are you guys more plugged into the third-party ecosystem? Are you more plugged into Microsoft, more plugged into VMware, Oracle, people like that, than you used to be? Because something that Hef said today was that with VMware Next and the extensions to what we have in VAAI today, they'll be available in VSP day one next time. So it's already in the code, is what he said. Mm-hmm. We're ready for what's coming next because we're plugged into them. Is that more and more happening now that you're starting to plug in and have tighter relationships?
It's something I've predicted for years. And it's, you know, Hugh and I have talked a lot about things moving to the edges, right? So initially, and a lot of it is because of startup activity, a lot of the intelligence starts out on the network in the form of appliances or whatever, but eventually they kind of move to the edges. They'll either move to the server, they'll move to the storage, right? But the ice is broken, and I think as the industry sees more and more functionality moving to the storage array, that's going to get people thinking about, well, maybe we can do this and maybe we can do that. So I think you will see more function moving into the storage array in the future.
Yeah. So we talk about storage virtualization, we talk about network virtualization, then we talk about systems virtualization.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go next from here? Like, what is...
Nothing exists. Everything's virtualized. There is no data. We just make it up.
Well, you know, we do virtualization of data. Okay, and by that, what we do is we disassociate the data from the application. And the way you do that, if you do that, it's just a bunch of bits. But what we do is we put it into a container. And in that container, we put the policies and the metadata that describe the data so we no longer need the application. Mm-hmm. And this is our content platform product. So now we're working with content containers that are separate from the application. So we've done that virtualization. The next step we want to do is put context around it, okay, so that some people call it information, but I really refer to it as context around content. And we recently announced our healthcare repository, life science healthcare repository, where you can have all these different modalities coming in, different XML or even NFS, SIFS, PACS, DCOM, and we put it into this containers. And then we can have a patient's name and extract all that information for a physician working through a portal or for a medical record. Somebody comes into hospital, we can then provide all that information for them. So in that sense, we're putting context around the content and making it more available for a physician or a healthcare worker to provide the exact care that's needed for that specific patient. So that's the kind of the roadmap we're on. First virtualizing the infrastructure, then virtualizing the data, and then now putting context around that data.
So can I just touch on that a little bit? Because I think there's a section there that we sort of step past. If you look at the way that servers have been virtualized, one of the features has been the ability to take away the server away from the hardware and move it anywhere so it can sit on any hardware. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, we really still can't quite do that with the data. We still can't quite pick up a piece of data and just say, I'm now going to access it over here. There's a lot of work that has to be done to make that work really
data
properly.
Data is stateful, so
So what about that? What about that as a concept? Because we started to see people talk about federated storage. And is that likely to be something that Hitachi would look at as an idea?
Maybe you could OEM VPlex.
No.
Check, please. Not sure how to answer that. I mean, you said that data we can move.
I didn't say it couldn't. I just said it couldn't be done easily. So, you know, you've already started some of those bits with HAM, for instance, to link arrays so you can do stuff that will allow you to spoof where the data's coming from between two arrays, but that's not really fully fleshed out. I don't really see where that's going yet.
Well, you can probably imagine what we're going to do with HAM. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about it.
I can pretty much guess.
You did earlier. Yeah. But if you look at a lot of the things that we've done, and I'll point to a combination of dynamic provisioning and dynamic tiering. And when you think about it, it's pretty powerful. A LUN has no physicality left anymore. There's nothing physical about the land anymore. And it's just, it's a container. And the fact that it's thin provisioned actually puts it in the same category as how mainframe has been for the last 30 years. You just allocate data, it thin provisions underneath, it manages to performance.
Yeah, and I
and
guess
it moves it when it needs to move.
I was thinking of that, and then what Hugh just mentioned about the idea of containers and how it's a piece of information that maps to, say, you know, healthcare. You could see that the container could be something that stores virtual machines. So that, that could be the next sort of interim stage as you move virtual machines around as containers rather than have to treat them as, say, LUNs or other objects. You know, you're almost making that an object that can be moved around.
Yeah.
That's the dynamicism you want.
Yeah, and if you think about, you know, the current environment where, you know, for instance, you know, my wife bought an Android phone last December. She lost 5 pounds.
You missed the fact you'd have to have a workout. That's not going to work.
No, she lost 5 pounds. She bought an Android and lost 5 pounds.
Must have been pretty big.
No, because she downloaded an app that counts the Weight Watcher points on all the meals. So she sits down a meal, plugs in the numbers, and she knows how much she should need.
Yeah.
Not good for me, because she usually puts the excess on my plate. But nonetheless, you know, apps. Okay, so now instead of data or content in containers, maybe it's apps that get, you know, sent to somebody and they execute it right out of the storage.
Yeah, so
right out of the storage.
Yeah.
Well, you know, why not? I mean, the VMFS can be picked up, and that's the virtual machine. Mm-hmm. You've got the metadata and the data all encapsulated. You can move that around and take it wherever you want. All you need is an execution platform to put it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it could be a mobile or it could be a server.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
You've got a big grin on your face.
No
big.
I think that's a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
He's glowing a little bit. I'm being surrounded by epiphanies.
Well, we're going to wrap this up here. You know, one of the things, Nigel, you know, we've been to a number of events together, and you're usually the flagship cynic in the room.
I'm trying to tone it down.
Oh, no, you did. You've actually done it really well. But let me ask you, I'm not seeing this up as a softball, but I'm just curious as far as what you talked about earlier today, as far as kind of your light bulb moment today. Was this a game changer for you as far as, you know, challenging some of the conventional wisdom that you carry walking in the door here and what you're walking away with? Because you have the reputation as being that cynic, that one that if somebody's going to make a bold statement, you're going to call them out on it and see how they back it up.
Yeah. I don't know that it's a game changer, but I really know that, I think I said a similar thing on a previous podcast with HDS as well, but HDS gets VMware, no doubt about that. Now I know that they plugged into it at every level, it seems, from what Hef's told us. Did not think that before. Thought you would just, you know, just another player. The thing is, VAAI though, everybody's gonna be supporting it in some respects in the future. It's not gonna be a differentiator. I don't know.
So just touching on that one a second, Nigel. Although you might have the features and the functionality as enablers, you have to have the back-end infrastructure to be able to drive that workload.
Scale,
and I think that is what everybody's been trying to give the message today.
You're right,
but that the new technology does give that scalability.
But most customers just see the tick boxes and they don't go down to the detail
the
at the back.
Yeah.
And customers of the future are not going to do that, I don't think.
We need 100 more Heffrons running around the world.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And you know, I think we're going to see a demo of some of this stuff at some stage over the next 2 days. It's things like the demos where you can actually really demonstrate the benefits and show that it does work and it does scale. Those are the sort of things that people want to see. I was at something recently where Fusion.io had a card which ran a video wall with hundreds of thousands of videos running at the same time. It actually needs to have a VSP and some servers and show how they can run thousands of VMs and clone them and do stuff and have it run all the time and use those features. Yeah, that would be a great demo.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. We're going to wrap this up. Nigel, why don't you tell everybody what your website is?
NigelPoulton.com. If I have a career change and I don't do storage,
wait a minute, let's shake it up a little bit. What's your Twitter handle?
Nigel Poulton.
All right, so that shouldn't be hard to look up. Chris, your website, you've got a couple of websites.
Yeah, I've merged it all back into the same one, so it's all at thestoragearchitect.com.
Thestoragearchitect.com. And on Twitter?
Chris M. Evans.
And also, you don't have a store.
I've got the STG Arch, which is just for days like this because there's so much traffic that comes from the Twitter feed that people get a bit annoyed by. So I separated it out.
Very good. Devang, your site?
Yeah, storagenerve.com, very easy to find, either Google or just your web browser.
And your Twitter handle?
Is Storage Nerve.
Storage Nerve. There you go. See how easy that is? Nobody else used their first and last name. I feel, wow.
Takes too many characters and out of 100.
Yeah, what's your Twitter handle, Hugh?
Oh, see. You know better. You asked me that last time.
Now, I spotted something today that I haven't tweeted about yet, but I know Hugh's not on Twitter, but I think Hugh uses Twitter. I'm sure I saw a Twitter screen on your
laptop. Yes, I do. I do monitor Twitter.
So you do follow
my dog's name is Magic, and he's on Twitter.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I did that because I wanted to see what sort of traffic, who signs up and wants to be associated with my dog.
And what's your dog's Twitter handle, in case our audience wants to follow?
Well, it's Magic.
Just Magic?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that one.
That's the
nice
name of my dog.
Nice name to have.
That's a very nice name to have. All right, Klaus, so as we wrap up, you've got a blog on the HDS website. People go to hds.com.
I do. blogs.hds.com/Klaus/Hugh/Hef. We're all out there.
So what do you got? Any big plans coming up? What's?
And my Twitter handle, by the way, is YoKlaus.
YoKlaus.
I'm building followers.
Good. So any big plans coming up? Any more travel coming up in the near future here?
Oh, yeah. After here, a private trip to Costa Rica.
Nice. You're going to be an S&W in a couple weeks?
I'll be an S&W. Hef and I are going to do a back-to-back.
Great. Hugh, are you going to be an S&W?
No, I'm going to be in Europe. I've got some customer accounts I'm calling on.
Very good.
Telling them about VAI.
I'm just curious. If you don't mind me asking, how many miles do you fly every year?
Oh, I don't know. I don't keep track of that, but just past 5 million miles.
Oh, a year?
No, not your lifetime, $5 million.
Yeah. Or $5 million, 5 million miles.
I've got 5 million miles.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And what do you have to show for? You go on vacations? Well, you're going to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
You get to take the family, you and the wife go on vacation?
Yeah, I take the family, kids. Yeah.
Very nice.
Boyfriends, girlfriends.
but not your girlfriends.
Well, this is great. You know, both of you, you're two of my favorite people in this industry, and I really enjoy reading your blogs and obviously having you on as a guest of the podcast. I really appreciate it, both of you, sincerely. You've contributed so much to this industry, and you guys are both icons in this industry, too. I think you know that. I just think it's really great that you take the time out to do the kind of evangelism that you do, and I think it's noteworthy.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
We love it.
Thank you very much. And that'll wrap up the podcast this week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the InfoSmack Podcast.
Join us for a new episode every Tuesday at theregister.co.uk, where you can also leave comments for the show.